a lot for coming again on the first day before even the keynote speaker has spoken. I'm very excited to present some of my work. This is all brand new just from this summer, and it's looking at the effects of sea level rise and saltwater intrusion on the lower eastern shore of Maryland. So this is an issue that's happening all across the Atlantic coastal plain, but I'm going to focus right now just on the lower eastern shore. So while this was one of the areas sort of first settled in the United States, and all of the agriculture at that time went to feed people, now almost all of the grain that's produced on the eastern shore goes to feed chickens, like these little guys. And in 2014, Maryland produced about 3 million meat chickens. So, and the area that I work in is actually termed the broiler belt, and Somerset County produces some of the highest rates of chickens in the entire United States. It's also an area that is seeing pervasive saltwater intrusion as a result of sea level rise. However, most of this has been studied in forested ecosystems. So you can imagine here that you're standing with your back to a loblolly pine forest that's not doing so well, and you're looking out at this tidal marsh. And what it looks like a forest that has recently been burned by fire is actually a forest that's recently been burned by salt. So this is the effect of the osmotic stress of salt on vascular plants, and we call these ghost forests. And as I mentioned, this is happening all along the Atlantic coastal plain. These red areas are regions of shallow coastal flooding, and a lot of this area is also home to agriculture. So a lot of this saltwater intrusion is happening on agricultural land. This is what some of that salt burn looks like on a soy field. It almost just looks like beach sand here. And so these fields, as I mentioned, have been in agriculture, some of them for hundreds and hundreds of years, for generations. Some of them are actually being taken out of agriculture. As I mentioned, the poultry industry is huge, and they're being converted into these so-called zero-acre farms, which are still large farm tracts, but they're home to these millions and millions of meat chickens. And so because of this complex land use history, it makes it very difficult to predict what's going to happen with climate change. And what makes it even trickier is that we're talking about saltwater. And saltwater is incredibly complex compared to freshwater. It has a higher ionic strength, many more base cations. It has a high pH. And most importantly for this talk, it has a high concentration of sulfate. And I'll talk about now why that sulfate is so deadly to these systems. So saltwater intrusion is happening in these lands. You can see this is a field that sort of has this swath of water moving through it. I sort of call these like intrusion fingers because they tend to happen just in these sort of sharp edges that move into these fields. So I'll walk you through the process. So this is our little farm field cartoon. You can see that one corn plant on the end there is looking rather gray and sad. And then just downslope of that is this marsh land. And here we have, it does hit your head, doesn't it? there's this aerobic soil that's perched above this anaerobic soil, and then we have this saltwater or tidal marsh that's just downslope. And so this region has a history of farming. And there's a lot of what's termed legacy phosphorus. So years and years of phosphorus fertilization from this poultry manure has accumulated in these soils, but most of it's bound pretty tightly to the iron oxide. So you can see here, this is iron 3, and you have a lot of these phosphates being bound to iron 3. So when these soils go anaerobic, that's when things start to get a little bit tricky. So as that water table rises, that iron 3 is reduced to iron 2. And some of that phosphorus is sort of knocked off during that process of reduction from iron 3 to iron 2. In some cases, you can have phosphorus binding to iron 2. That's possible. And oftentimes, it'll diffuse back up into those aerobic soils. The problem really comes when you add sulfate to this equation. So the sulfate from the seawater is going to come into those anaerobic soils, and it reduces itself to sulfide. and then binds to iron. So now you have iron sulfides in these soils, and the sulfur is essentially gobbling up those seats that phosphorus could take to bind to the iron. And as you have more and more intrusion, as that increases with sea level rise, the sulfate is just continuing to gobble up that pool of iron that otherwise would have been available for phosphorus to be bound up. So what we expect to happen is, as the saltwater intrusion is happening on these agricultural lands, which it is, we're going to see more and more phosphorus being released into solution. And those of you who are familiar with some of the issues around the Chesapeake Bay, we see high concentrations still of phosphorus in the Chesapeake Bay, even though farmers have been doing their darndest to reduce the amount of phosphorus they're adding to their soils. And I believe that part of this is because we're seeing the saltwater intrusion on these low-lying agricultural fields that are prone to release a lot of phosphorus, and I'll show you the magnitude of that in just a moment. So this is just an aerial view of this beautiful landscape, but unfortunately, it's in danger of releasing large quantities of phosphorus into these tidal creeks in the Chesapeake Bay. So I'm very lucky to work with about 6-7 farmer partners all along the Lower Eastern Shore. Some of these dots are actually a collection of farms so that we could sort of have our different land uses of interest, which are these. So we're looking at landscapes in transition, fields in transition, and then soils in transition, sort of moving down that scale. So we have our fields here, and that we've identified flooded fields, so the edges of those fields where we're seeing the saltwater intrusion, and then these marshes that are down slope. And by down slope, we're talking like half a foot. This is a very flat landscape. We also have these remnant coastal forests and these ghost forests that I mentioned, also draining into these tidal wetlands. And so here are some of our data from this summer, just looking at sort of the landscape level. These are lysimeters that were installed at 25 and 50 centimeters. There's no difference really in the concentration by depth. And what you'll see here are very high concentrations. Just for a little context, the EPA threshold for eutrophication is 0.031, and you can see we are far, far above that. The other thing you'll notice is that it appears that a lot of that phosphorus is making it into those marsh systems, which are anaerobic, and the consequences of that for release to downstream and then to the Chesapeake Bay are very high. This is a scatter plot of some of the concentrations of phosphorus along salinity as a function of salinity. What I really want you to notice more than anything else here are these circles right here. So these are farms, and these are the salinity levels we're seeing on farms in the Lower Eastern Shore. So corn has a salt tolerance of 0.8 parts per thousand, and we're seeing salinity levels at 11 parts per thousand on these farms, and even higher into what's basically seawater. And so you can imagine the effect this is going to have, obviously, on agriculture. Soybeans do a little bit better. They have a salt tolerance of about 2.5, but there's really very few crops that can handle salinity levels above 5-7 parts per thousand. So these are really becoming marginal lands. So let's look at some of those marginal lands or those marginal fields. As I mentioned, the saltwater intrusion kind of happens in these fingers. So you can see these are three different fields at three different stages of the corn, soy, and wheat rotations. And what we did was set up transects along these saltwater intrusion fingers from the crop, and then there's the crop right where the crop edge, so where the crop is starting to look kind of bad. And then there's this characteristic bare part that happens at the leading edge of that saltwater intrusion where pretty much nothing is growing. And then you have a variety of different marsh species. This particular farm, that ditch edge area is covered in Phragmites australis, which is an invasive reed species. We're also doing a whole other component of this project that I'm not going to talk about today that's just on the community structure of the vegetation that's colonizing these areas. But right now, I just want to show you some of the soil data. So we installed lysimeters and also collected soil cores down to about 140 centimeters along these transects. And here are the data from the soil cores. This is malic 3 extractable phosphorus. So let's just take 1 second to look at the x-axis here. So this is by depth. So this is if you're looking straight down. It's a little bit different than your typical graph. So you imagine that you're just looking down here, and then these are the concentrations on the x-axis. And the first thing to note is that a high phosphorus field is at a 100. That's what's considered high. And we are dealing with fields that have phosphorus concentrations, malic 3 extractable, almost beyond 800, I've seen on some of these farms. So incredibly high concentrations of phosphorus. And it appears that we have a similar trend occurring on these farm fields, which is phosphorus is moving laterally from the center of the field towards those ditch edges, probably with erosion, and as the salt water moves in and carries the sediment back out. And we're seeing this accumulation of phosphorus in the soil also as we move towards those more anaerobic areas. And then again, so this is just the concentration of phosphorus in that ditch, which is very high, this particular ditch. So then we really wanted to understand the mechanisms. What's driving this transition and this release of phosphorus? So we have started some microcosms. This is our first microcosm study. And we're looking at high phosphorus soils, and we're exposing them to salt, sulfate, salt plus sulfate, and deionized water. We did this in an aerobic setting first, and there was very little phosphorus released. But if you keep these things anaerobic, these are the concentrations. So just taking a peek at the y-axis, we're now another order of magnitude higher than we were in the ditch edges. Obviously, this is an idealized situation. We kept these things completely anaerobic, but what we see, it tends to be like a light switch being turned on and off, and phosphorus is released into the solution. And so this obviously has huge implications for the amount of phosphorus that could be released as these farms start to transition. So just to summarize these findings, on the landscape level, we see the highest concentrations of phosphorus is in the pore water. When we look at the fields, again, we see the phosphorus is moving into these ditches and marshes. And in the soils, we see huge releases of phosphorus when these soils become anaerobic. So in conclusion, this is a pretty dire situation, and we need to try to come up with some ways that we can prevent future losses. That could mean some sort of remediation strategies, conservation programs, and also potentially some engineered solutions on the landscape in order to try to deal with this. And I'll take any questions.
It's time for one question.
I'll take one question.
Do these fields have any subsurface drainage?
Some of them have subsurface drainage, but most of that, there's only one of them I've seen has subsurface drainage. Most of them have ditches.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. So, and I'm actually a little concerned about the way it's being managed. So farmers will add gypsum to soils to try to remediate the effects of the salt water. The problem is that gypsum has sulfur in it, even more sulfur. So the next round of microcosms is going to add gypsum to those soils to see what happens with if gypsum is actually making this worse in terms of the phosphorus release. It does help mitigate some of the issues related to the saltwater problem.
Thanks.
Thank you.